This is Progressive Radio, a weekly conversation hosted by Matthew Rothschild, editor of The Progressive Magazine, a leading voice for peace and social justice. For more information about Progressive Radio or The Progressive Magazine, log on to our website at progressive.org.
I'm Matt Rothschild, and welcome to Progressive Radio, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. Today, I'm delighted to have back in the studio with me Greg Pallast, the great investigative reporter and best-selling author of Armed Madhouse and The Best Democracy Money Can Buy. His latest book, a real fun read, is Vulture's Picnic in Pursuit of Petroleum Pigs, Power Pirates, and High Finance Carnivores. Greg Pallast, welcome back.
Hey, glad to be with you, Matt.
That title's a mouthful. Do you want to digest it for us a little bit?
Yeah, Vulture's Picnic. Well, this is a story of the 1%. I'm a reporter for BBC Television and the Guardian newspapers, and some people, I guess, hear me also on Democracy Now. And, of course, they read me in The Progressive. But what I was doing an investigation of that 1%, the rich guys, the banks, these financiers who are called vultures. I didn't call them that. They call themselves vultures, proudly. I did half the book's an investigation of the Deepwater Horizon, not the CNN, oh, it was an accident version, but the oop, it wasn't an accident, it was a homicide version, the story of Fukushima, and the story of investigative reporting, sober and otherwise, and dressed and undressed, whatever it takes. I get the story undercover, sometimes literally. So that's when you say it's fun. Not always fun when I'm there, like under arrest in Azerbaijan. If you know where that is, if you don't know where it is, don't worry. 82nd Airborne will arrive there and you'll learn. But that's the story. Except I have to change the title, Matt. Oh, because last night I got a call from Mitt Romney. He wanted me to change it from Vulture's Picnic to Job Creator's Picnic. Though, actually, no kidding. I do want you to know that Mitt Romney's number one funder and his economics advisor called my network, BBC Television in London, to threaten us with a lawsuit.
Why?
And also to say, you'll love this. This is Mitt Romney's mayor. We have a file on Greg Pallast. And then the network, she says, so do we. It's called Vulture's Picnic. I lay everything out. You can't smear me because I've already smeared myself.
Why were they mad at you?
Because of Vulture's Picnic. And because BBC has been running a series, which is repeated on Democracy Now!, running a series of reports on these vultures, these financiers, or the job creators, as we call them, who are making billions of dollars while the world is falling on its knees. They're called vultures because they're like international repo men. They grab the economies of the poorest nations in the world. They do it by really complex and weird financial flim-flam, which I follow by going to Africa and Latin America, Asia, wherever the trail takes me to hunt these guys down and find out how, for example, the GOP's number one funder made $4 billion in the middle of a worldwide depression.
And one of the places you follow them to is Greece. You talk about how Wall Street, Goldman Sachs helped bring about the collapse of the Greek economy by some of the same flim-flam you've just been talking about.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the storyline in the U.S. press is that Greeks are just a bunch of lazy, olive pit spitting, ouzo swilling slobs who won't work a full day to retire when they're teenagers, you know, and borrowing German money that they won't give back. Nah, nah, nah. Greece is a crime scene. Goldman Sachs cut a deal with prior Greek governments to take money out of their treasury, convert it to yens, convert it back. This is simplification, by the way. And in the process, Goldman loses billions of dollars, and the Greek government has a gain which wipes out their government deficits. Goldman doesn't lose money deliberately. Instead, it was a flim-flam. The Greek government had still owed Goldman big money, usurious interest, and they pay Goldman a third of $1 billion in fees for the flim-flam. That's just one of the stories in the section of Vulture's Picnic called The Generalissimo of Globalization. When I have all these internal documents, and I have to verify them, but with my position with BBC, I can get to people like the head of the WTO, the Frenchman Pascal Lamy, who says, we are not an evil cabal of bankers, Mr. Pallast. Oh, he's, by the way, the head of Crédit Lyonnais, the big French bank. I said, well, you may not be a cabal, but what about these meeting notes, Goldman Sachs, Bank of America?
And you had the phone numbers from the executives.
And I have the phone numbers of the top guys because I got my hands on a document that went from Timmy Geithner to our Secretary of Treasury to Larry Summers, who was our economic czar, or the Typhoid Mary of economics, depending on how you want to title him. And it was about really how they were going to basically force other nations through the threat of trade war to either they join the deregulation, banking deregulation leper colony, you got to kiss the lepers and the J.P. Morgan, or you get destroyed. And it's quite shocking documents.
Well, let's explore that a little further. I mean, Geithner and Summers were insisting that countries around the world, including third world countries, you talk a lot about Ecuador, right, for instance, that they sign on to the WTO financial aspects of the treaty, which totally deregulates banking, right, in every country and allows the Western bankers just to come in and make out like,
right,
bandits.
And so Brazil resisted. And it drove them crazy. So one of the documents is basically they're going to declare trade war on Brazil and make Lula drink his own orange juice and destroy Brazil, because Brazil refused to accept derivatives trading, would not let Morgan open up a bank branch. By the way, what job is that creating? I've never been to a derivatives factory that employs people, so I'm not sure about the jobs creation. But we're going to destroy Brazil unless they give in to our bankers. Lula says no, and it's the only country in the hemisphere just about that doesn't fall on its knees during the recession. And then I take the documents to the president of Ecuador, because he's a conspiracy nut, a professor at the University of Illinois before he's president, an economist. He says there's a cabal of bankers, the WTO, the IMF, and the World Bank, and the oil companies, which have destroyed. There's secret agreements between these guys. He has none of these documents. So I give him I say, look, Mr. President, you are a conspiracy nut, but here's the documentation that proves you right. So that's part of the book is getting – and then from there I go into the Amazon jungle to investigate Chevron.
And what was Chevron doing there?
Well, we got a word that Chevron had crapped oil all over the Amazon rainforest. And New York Times and Wall Street Journal were talking about how it's all phony. It's not a real story. BBC sends me in. And I said, well, how do I get there? They say, by a boat. So I fly into the middle of the Amazon rainforest, and I take a Jeep to the end of a track. And I'm waiting for Humphrey Bogart to come down the African Queen and take me to this native village. And instead, there's this guy pouring down the jungle, and the guy says, Sue Barco, your boat. It's a dugout log. I kid you not, a dugout log with a hand-carved paddle. And I imagine my fedora, you know, like floating down to Brasilia. But instead, it's like a bad jungle movie. Excuse me, if you're a member of Sierra Club, it's a rainforest. This guy comes out of the rainforest, an indigenous guy, grabs a paddle. We're off to a village. I find all this oil crap all over the place. And by the way, I take it to Chevron, the information. Chevron and its technical lawyers, they're laughing. They're saying, because it was causing cancer, according to these doctors. And they say, oh, these are the only kids who get cancer. Well, maybe it's oil, but you can't prove it's our oil. So I pull out a document written by the president of their Texaco unit himself, who says, take any documents out of the file cabinets in our offices or in the field camps. And it's in Spanish. And all documents are to be destruidos. I don't need a lot of Spanish to know that it's destroyed. And I asked the Chevron guys, well, what does this mean? And they said, oh, there's an explanation. I said, well, destruidos in my neighborhood means obstruction of justice, a felony crime, you ought to go to jail. They say, oh, there's an explanation. It's 2.5 years now. I'm waiting for the explanation.
You also say in your book, Greg Palast, in the book is Vulture's Picnic, that Chevron, the big, huge oil company, was trying to make it out like they're these indigenous people who are the crafty ones, and they hired, you know, these crafty lawyers on some flimsy case and they were extortion artists, essentially. That was their claim.
Well, and of course, yeah. That's the claim, because what American reporters are going to go into the Amazon to do this? I mean, Anderson Cooper actually was going to come with me, but he couldn't get his makeup man into the canoe, so forget it. But that's the problem. American news reporters, unlike BBC, don't go there. I mean, I had to go to Azerbaijan to find out what happened with the Deepwater Horizon. I had to go into Africa to hunt down Mitt Romney's guys. I was just in Bosnia and the Congo trying to chase this guy's billions around. I can't do that for any U.S. news outlet. But that's why, in a way, that's why I wrote Vulture's Picnic, because until Patriot Act 3 kicks in, you can read a book.
I mean, U.S. media won't do it, can't do it, because it spends too much money, or they're biased against stories like this?
Yes, both. It's very expensive to do investigative reporting, and if you use your whole budget up on the makeup guys, this is no kidding, teeth capping and hair pieces, there's no money for doing the actual work. And it's dangerous in many ways, mainly commercially. And obviously, like PBS was telling me, told us, the problem with Deepwater Horizon is that BP had a bad culture of safety, not like Chevron. What the Petroleum Broadcast System didn't say is that the number one official national sponsor of PBS NewsHour is Chevron Corporation. You know, so there was no investigation of Chevron Corporation. Actually, my network and BBC asked PBS if they would do the investigation jointly to save money. No way. Not if it included Chevron.
I'm speaking with Greg Pals. You're listening to Progressive Radio. I'm Matt Rothschild. I'm the editor at the Progressive Magazine. Talk a little bit about the Deepwater Horizon spill and explosion. You don't give the standard explanation for what happened.
No, I don't, because a couple hours after the explosion, I get a cable from a ship floating in the middle of the Caspian Sea, right, that says this has happened before. And if that's true, then if it's happened before, then this is not an accident, it's a homicide. So I have to fly to Azerbaijan to find out what happened. And I do. So I use a cockamamie story to get in with my cameraman. I get arrested in the middle of the desert trying to get to the BP terminal. And, of course, the first thing that happens, the security ministry and the torturing chief himself showed up. Someone tipped him off, said, give us your film, which they were armed. I had a camera. I gave them the film. But at least they let me keep my pen. A bit of a mistake on their part, because I had one of those Austin Power jobs with the little camera inside the pen. And that's how I got out the evidence that the exact same blowout had happened before. BP covered it up. They'd sworn before Congress it had never happened before. They covered it up, and that's why the explosion was not an accident but a homicide.
No, it had happened before, but people weren't killed in Azerbaijan. It was lucky that people weren't killed. What happened there?
What happened there is that, well, what happened in Deepwater Horizon is that a guy named Jason Alexander decided that when it was blowing out that he better hit the blowout preventer switch. Hitting that switch caused a spark, and he and 10 other guys were immediately evaporated. And in Azerbaijan, it was a massive blowout. A lot of people die there as workers. It's one of the most dangerous places in the world because there's no health and safety. I spoke to the woman trying to form a union there of BP workers. And I knew, and very courageous, because I knew as soon as I left, they did it before, she's in her 60s, that they would beat her up and throw in jail, as they've done three times before, just for speaking to me. And, man, that's courage.
She's a fearless lady, it sounds like.
Well, a lot of Vulture's Picnic is a story of just courageous people like the pig man, the guy who tells me the real story. If you want to sleep tonight, then don't hear this story about the pig man.
Well, tell us the story about the pig man.
Okay, you hooked me. No, pig man, they're telling you the XL pipeline, XL Keystone, which is going to slash America in half, is safe. Why is it safe? Because we have all these rules, and we have all the safety equipment. The main piece of safety equipment is called a pig. Every pipeline has a pig in it, and not just the BP executive who's sucked into it, but it's a robot which beeps and boops and squeals when there's corrosion, leaks, crack, it's going to explode. But
it's an alarm. It's a warning sign.
Yeah, but it's this robot that goes through every pipeline has to have several of these. Now, but the pigs have been silenced by software. And how do I know this? Because I get messages first from what we call Pigman 1, then Pigman 2, and Pigman 3 saying the software has been messed with. So it's kind of dialed down so the pig doesn't squeal very often. That's why we had the break in Yellowstone, the massive breaks in Alaska, breaks you've never heard of, and why Keystone is dangerous.
Well, so, why wouldn't they want the alarm to go off?
Because every time a pig squeals, you got to dig up the pipe, fix it or replace it. Several million dollars a mile. It would add up to many, many billions. It's just easier to dial down the pigs. Like taking the battery out of your smoke alarm, which is okay as long as your kid's bedroom isn't on fire. And one other thing, it's not just a good idea to have the pig squeal. It's the law. This is a felony crime. And I couldn't get Pigman to go on camera, talk with me, give me the details.
No, Pigman is someone who was working on these robots.
He was the guy who actually did the software fix. Okay. He tried to – he didn't want to do it, but it was his job or –
They ordered him to dial it down.
Ordered to dial down. And then when in San Bruno, California, 9 people were incinerated, burnt alive by an exploding pipeline, He said, again, not an accident, another homicide. He came forward, which is very courageous. The other pigmen ran because they didn't want to be involved in what is basically a negligent homicide. Hmm. But so again, tremendous courage to get these sources, even though in his case I can't use his name, still massive courage. They'll hunt for him. And so it goes from Azerbaijan and then up, you know, to the Arctic, wherever the news carries me, which I can't do, you know, in on U.S. news.
Speaking with Greg Palast, the great investigative reporter who works for BBC and other British media outlets. He's not hired by PBS or by 60 Minutes, for that matter.
Nope.
And that's kind of a shame and a crime and an indictment of the U.S. media, if ever there were one. But let's stay with this BP Deepwater Horizon calamity, and also Exxon Valdez, which you returned to and discussed in some detail. It's quite an interesting chapter in this book. And you say, you know, the cover story is Exxon Valdez is just a drunk captain.
And
BP was just a bad culture.
Yeah, see, this is the – it's all about mother nature or human nature are always to blame, never corporate greed, cover-up, or fraud. So, for example, before I was an investigative reporter, I was an investigator. I was in charge of the racketeering and fraud allegations in the Exxon Valdez breakup after that ship hits the reef. Well, what I find out is that, Exxon – I'm not letting Exxon off the hook. Because believe it or not, they turned off the radar. The old GPS systems used to cost like $2-3 million, not $200 from, you know, that you put on your dashboard. They used to be really expensive. So Exxon said, this is too expensive. Just shut it off. That's why it hit the reef. But even if it hit the reef, that shouldn't make a difference, because what you do is it's really simple. You have a bunch of equipment. You have rubber that you put around it. You have these sucker boats, containment boats, rubber and suck.
And they said they were going to have them.
And they not only said, listen to this, British Petroleum, not Exxon, was in charge of having the equipment in place. They promised in writing, and by the way, you get all these documents in Vulture's Picnic. This isn't, you know, like, hey, I've got a document. I'm not Joe McCarthy saying, I've got a document. I'm like him. I've got documents, but I actually have them, right? And so the documents say that were signed by British Petroleum say we will have equipment at Bly Reef. The rubber, we'll have safety crews ready to go in an emergency. It's like a fire department except for oil spills. But it was a complete fabrication, a total lie. And the ship hit right at Bly Reef. In other words, if they had the equipment there, it would have been like having a trash can fire in front of a firehouse. And in fact, the firehouse there where it was supposed to be, it went – people don't know this. It was at the village of Tetitlik. And the natives had been hired for these emergency crews. They were all trained to respond to an oil emergency, but BP had fired them. And never told the government that they'd basically fired the fire department. And so the natives are just watching this stuff pour out and totally destroy their waters, and they were helpless. This story never came out. There's four volumes of evidence which were buried, and I wrote the four volumes. So in this book I say, you know, find me in contempt of court. Do whatever you want to me. Sue me. I don't care. I'm going to put this stuff on the record. That's – in a way, Vulture's Picnic is revealing a lot out of my files that obviously a lot of people would rather me not do, and in some cases I'm not supposed to. So here it is. Do your worst.
Now, Greg Palast, the your role as an investigator, not as an investigative reporter at the Exxon Valdez huge spill – ended your career, you write in this book, as an investigator. You got disgusted because the companies were just throwing their weight around and the plaintiffs weren't able to – and the people who got damaged and hurt weren't able to get what is justly theirs.
Yeah.
Well, what happened? Why'd you throw it in the towel there?
Well, look, I had the real culprit in the Exxon Valdez breakup. I mean, I'm not letting Exxon off the hook, but British Petroleum. I recommended that we bring racketeering case and fraud charges against British Petroleum. What happened? You know, they've got the politics. It was the Bush senior administration. It was another oil administration. Forget it. None of this stuff is going to happen. So I just gave up. Plus, I was seeing that in the newspapers, the real stories were never getting out in the American press about these companies. Whether I did a big nuclear racketeering investigation. These stories aren't coming out. So I said, well, I'll write them up. And so I thought, well, I'll start writing for American newspapers. Forget about it. But in 2 weeks, I was immediately put on the Guardian newspapers and on their investigations team, and then the top of the BBC Nightly News.
It was a quick rise there as an investigative reporter.
It took about 2 weeks.
Not everyone is that lucky. What do you enjoy so much about being an investigative reporter?
investigating that getting the guys, getting him, like, you know, like this guy, this billionaire vulture, Paul Singer, Mitt Romney's guys. When I get the documents, it's like, what a feeling, better than being in the room with the labor MP. But the, and like, for example, when I just found out just now, one of the vultures in Vulture's Picnic, we find out that he's made a $3 million payment to the president of Zambia to get the president of Zambia to agree to pay off some debts, which in fact had already been written off. It's a real scam. But he's turning over money that the U.S. taxpayers paid to buy AIDS medicine for Zambia. This guy's taking the AIDS medicine. And by the way, his name, he goes by the name Goldfinger. I'm not making that up. The difference is that the James Bond Goldfinger is kind of a Girl Scout compared to the real Goldfinger. Goldfinger pays $3 million. We follow his trail to his bank because he's taking the money to the bank. Obviously, bank account in Geneva. He stops to go shopping, as you would when you go to the bank, except he spends $1 million cash buying elevator shoes and because he's a short dictator, and a diamond-studded tie. Ms. Badpenny, who is our investigatrix, and she's multilingual, so she goes and speaking local French and switches to the Alpine German when she finds out the guy is German.
This is an employee of yours.
Yeah, well, she's like my sidekick, Ms. Badpenny, and that really is her moniker for years. And she goes and says, oh, we're doing a reality show, shopping, with the rich and famous. Anyone rich and famous come in? Oh, yeah, the president of Zambia just bought all this shit, blah, blah, blah. We put that on the air. How, you know, that you see the diamonds, you see Goldfinger. We stake out Goldfinger in Washington, D.C. You know, he's a big shot. He's hired Jack Abramoff, by the way, to protect him. But I stake him out and we jump him with the evidence. Anyway, we end up that in Britain, they then outlaw these vulture repo men. All of Europe outlaws them. China outlaws. That's very, very satisfying, very fun. But by the way, in the U.S., the vultures, well, Mitt Romney's, I shouldn't call them, these job creators are now advising Romney. It's not, and by the way, this is not partisan. I go after both parties, but it seems like they're buying, the vultures have kind of purchased the Republicans, but they rent the Democrats when they need to.
I'm speaking with Greg Palast about his new book, Vulture's Picnic, In Pursuit of Petroleum Pigs, Power Pirates, and High Finance Carnivores. I'm Matt Rothschild. I'm the editor at the Progressive Magazine. This is Progressive Radio. Greg, I have a passage flagged there in that book of yours. It's a short one, but you tell in this passage what you're doing. And if you wouldn't mind just reading it, I think it's a really nice little piece.
Oh, thanks. Well, what I say is that there's only one story. It's a story of us and them. They get homes bigger than Disneyland. We get foreclosure notices. They get private jets to private islands. We get tar balls and lost futures and pay their gambling debts with our pensions. They get their third trophy wives and a tax break, and we get subprimed. They get two candidates on the ballot, and we're told to choose. They get the gold mine, and we get the shaft. And that's the story I write.
Yeah,
everywhere in the world. I mean, all my stories, whether it's the financial vultures or the radiation salesman, that's it. They get the gold mine, we get the shaft.
And you said at the very beginning of the show that that you're reporting on the 1%, and that's what resonates when I was reading it, because, you know, we're in the midst of this Occupy Wall Street, we are the 99% movement. Were you surprised by this movement?
Yeah. I'm thrilled, because Americans actually don't have this information. Remember, I reported this stuff that I'm writing, Vulture's Picnic, I put at the top of the BBC Nightly News. I know why people are protesting. Congolese are up in arms about this stuff. In fact, Congolese were now, just this past week, were picketing in front of the house of one of these vultures. The rest of the world knows these stories. Americans just had a feeling that something was wrong, so they're occupying Wall Street. But no one's against an address. That's just a street sign. That's a place on a Google map, Wall Street. People have a feeling, but what I want to do with Vulture's Picnic is give them the names so that you know Paul the Vulture Singer, that you know Goldfinger, that you know what Goldman Sachs is doing in a dark room with Timmy Geithner, that you know what the real story is with British Petroleum and the oil companies and how, what they do, because I want you to not just say it's the 1%, I want you to know who these guys are.
And when they know who these people are, what do you want them to do with that knowledge?
I'm just a reporter, man. But all I can tell you is that I find when people know, they act. When I put this report on top of BBC television, the laws are changed all over all over the world. And by the way, John Conyers saw the report, the first report, when Bush was still hanging in there in office, and goes into Bush's office and says, Greg Pounds did this report and on BBC, and your donors, Mr. President, are taking away the aid money we're giving to Africa. What are you going to do about it? And, you know, Bush was like, I don't know about that, anything about this. Of course, that's his answer to everything.
And sometimes it's a credible answer.
You know, it sounds good. She said, well, now you know. What are you going to do? And actually, Bush ordered the FBI to contact me, bring me in. That wasn't too good, because the boss of the FBI agents and the Justice Department guys who came to me, a guy named Tim Griffin, and I just done a story on Tim Griffin being involved in voter caging, which is to remove black voters from voter rolls, one of my stories I've been covering for years. And basically, so I'd called their chief a felon, and he's supposed to be he's supposed to now have his guys go on a felony investigation on my say-so. So that didn't work out too well.
Yeah, I imagine he wasn't delighted to follow up on that order. But we only have about 2 minutes left. One of the things that I liked about your book, Vulture's Picnic, Greg Pals, was the personal stuff, not the sex. Well, the sex is fun, but the stuff about your dad.
Sex is fun.
Tell me a little bit about your dad and the influence he had on you.
Well, my dad sold furniture, and he hated furniture, but he had no choice. You know, he would have liked to go out and go into the jungle and fight the bad guys, but he couldn't. He had kids and the usual thing. But he felt that America was stealing, that the 1% were taking us down, and he was frustrated, couldn't do anything about it. And of course, that's how he sent me out on this quest. Now, you have to understand, I'm a kid from the wrong end of L.A., Chicano neighborhood. If you saw Pulp Fiction, there's this junkyard there. I lived right near there. That's a real place, unfortunately. And that's where I come from. And we're marked to be losers. We're marked to be losers. But my father said, you're going to do something about this. You're going to go out there and get these guys. And in many ways, I was resentful that I was being sent out, that my life would now be dedicated to a task which he didn't have, in my opinion, didn't have the courage, you know, that he was a coward. I mean, now, after years, I understand, of course, as a father, that, you know, what you want to do is keep a roof over your kids' heads. But so it was very difficult. In the middle of this investigation, my father dies. And so I'm trying to, like, place myself, find out where am I? What have my parents and my heritage given me? And I want everyone to ask themselves that. What choices are you making in life?
You know, it's a real sweet and moving part of this book. The book's Vulture's Picnic, In Pursuit of Petroleum Pigs, Power Pirates, and High Finance Carnivores. The author, my guest today, Greg Pals. Greg, how can people get a hold of the book or give you tips if they got story tips?
Yeah, actually, there is a place I really do get the tips. Pigman called me through his Caspian. They go to my site. But go to vulturespicnic.org. You can not only get – obviously, you can tag through to get the book, Vulture's Picnic, but there's films that go with every chapter of the book. If you get the book and go to vulturespicnic.org, you can get the film which goes with each chapter. So like that filming I did with the little pen and the camera, you can actually see that stuff – And get it there. And then also it says conspire or join with me. Click there and do give me – I really mean it. I really want that stuff marked secret. Believe me, I want it.
Thanks so much, Greg.
Today's program is available online at progressive.org. You can also write to us at 409 East Main Street, Madison, Wisconsin, 53703. Our music is by Mufa. Progressive Radio is produced by Elizabeth DiNovella and engineered at Audio for the Arts in Madison, Wisconsin.